Welcome to the FTN NBA Podcast with your hosts, Adam Pfeiffer and Joe Metz. Presented by the FTN Network, this two-man fast break runs you through the best cash and tournament options for every game on today's slate.
What up? What's going on, everybody? FTN Fantasy NBA Podcast back at you here, part of the FTN Network. Adam Pfeiffer joined by Joe Metz, as always. We have a six-game slate, possibly a five-game slate. We'll see what happens because the COVID protocols and testing struck again in the NBA on Monday night, and it was rather tilting. Joe, what's up, man? How was your Monday night? Kind of a crazy slate all around. We got a ton of news and value later on in the evening before the slate locked, and of course we get the hammer that the Pistons and Denver game was postponed because of an inconclusive test result, and yeah, that was the end of my night.
Yeah, luckily I only had Will Barton in that last game. I only ran one lineup on only on FanDuel today. Had Will Barton, but he was about 47 to 50% owned in all the tournaments I was in, so I was mitigated. I was able to mitigate that loss, but the issue for me is, you know, Giannis got hampered by blowout run. Like, the way things are, I mean, we're obviously recording while the slate is still going on. The way things are trending in the Memphis and San Antonio game, it was a 17-point lead. Last time I looked at both Ja Morant and DeMar DeRozan. So hoping blowouts don't kill my night. But regardless, you know, DraftKings already issued a statement saying that they will be refunding or making up the difference between entry fees and winnings. So they were incredibly efficient on top of it. Still awaiting word from FanDuel, but I mean, if you've been around in the industry for even a week, you'll come to learn that they typically lag behind in situations like this. So my guess is we hear something before lock tomorrow.
Yeah, pretty tilting overall night for me. Like, I had obviously Giannis. I talked about on the podcast how I loved Christian Wood, and he was smashing to start. The only problem was, so was the rest of the Houston team, and they shot 11 to 14 from three in the first quarter, and that game got out of hand early. So he goes for 18 and 11 in 26 minutes, but again, doesn't get to play his full allotment of minutes, or else he would have smashed. I had a decent amount of Malik Monk, but of course, those lines where I had him, I had players from the Denver game, or Wood or Giannis, so that hurt. Like, it was a what could have been slate for me, and obviously it's going to be like that for a lot of people. Malik Monk, by the way, 34 real points, my goodness. But yeah, like, we move on, we move forward, and good on DraftKings, by the way. They released that statement, and it was good for them, or good by them, I should say. Still tilted because I wanted to see how that game played out with Jeremy Grant and Jamal Murray and Jokic in one of my lineups. But it's the time we live in. It would have been nice to maybe just, you know, maybe have some sort of clue that there was some potential testing issues going on before the game. Not like the
beat writers. You think there would be something reported.
Yeah, so that's not out of our control, obviously. But we move forward onto this six-game slate on Tuesday night. And we start with Toronto and Orlando. So Orlando's going to be without Aaron Gordon for the next 4 to 6 weeks after suffering an ankle sprain. And this is huge, obviously, because we talked about it for a while, how Aaron Gordon was essentially playing point forward since Markelle Fultz went down. Lately, we started to see Cole Anthony's minutes. You know, you talked about how for a little bit he was still in that 27 to 28 minute range because Steve Clifford didn't want to play him too many minutes. He didn't think he was ready. But now that's kind of changed. He's been playing 30 minutes a lot more consistently, and now he's going to have to essentially be the main ball handler because there's just nobody else left. Michael Carter-Williams is still out. Fultz is obviously out for the year. Gordon's now out. So let's start with Orlando here, where we'll talk about Cole Anthony and the rest of those wings that could benefit from Gordon being out in a second. But can we just establish that Nikola Vucevic's price tag is egregious? He's 8,200.
Is this the lowest price he's been this season? I think it might be. I can't remember seeing him lower than this.
I don't ever recall him being having a 7 next to his name
in terms of price. Even last season. I don't.
Like, he just played this team, went for 45.5 fantasy points. Now Aaron, and he shot 5 of 18, by the way. Now Aaron Gordon's out. With Gordon and Fultz off the floor. He has a 33% usage rate, a 34% rebounding rate, and he's averaging 1.3 fantasy points per minute. I don't care about the matchup. It's not even as bad as it was last year, obviously, because they don't have Serge Ibaka and Marcus Saul in there. Aaron Baines is playing more minutes now, sure, but like I don't care. I'm not afraid to play Vucevic because of Aaron Baines. This is just a misprice. It would have been a misprice if Aaron Gordon was fully healthy.
Yeah, I agree. And there's at this point, because of his price, you really don't need to analyze the matchup at all. You don't need to look at how he's performing because, again, you said he had 45-plus DraftKings points and he shot under 33% from the field. He's also, like, when I was looking at the slate between the two sites, I looked at FanDuel first and I thought he was a touch cheap there at 8,800, only to then turn my attention to DraftKings where he's exponentially cheaper. It just doesn't make sense, and it's definitely something you should take advantage of because I would assume this will be one of the more popular plays on the slate, especially if it's whittled down to five games. Outside of Vucevic, my favorite play from this Magic team is Evan Fournier. He's been back for about 2 weeks now, ever since, and obviously Markelle Fultz has been inactive since his return. In the last 2 weeks, you know, we've talked a lot about Aaron Gordon's assist rate. You take Aaron Gordon off the court in those 2 weeks, and Evan Fournier's assist rate is approaching 35%. That's higher than Aaron Gordon's has been over the past 2 weeks with everyone on the court. In that same scenario, usage rate right around 28%, 1.26 DraftKings points per minute. He stands to benefit a ton, in my opinion. I think he'll have the ball in his hand a ton. He's obviously shown more willingness now, more so than seasons past, to operate as a playmaker and a distributor. So from the standpoint of struggling with Evan Fournier for years because he was such a one-dimensional player, he now has not only the opportunity but the willingness to gather those peripherals that you really need to be comfortable with him. $6,300 is a phenomenal price for him, in my opinion. And in this spot with these injuries and this role, I'd pay upwards of $7,000 for him on Tuesday.
Yeah, I prefer Cole Anthony, but I get it. Like, he has been, like, they just don't have that many ball handlers right now. And that's why Cole Anthony sets up as a really strong play at 5,500, coming off a strong game. I've talked about it a lot. For whatever it is with this Magic system, their point guards just have the ball in their hands a ton. Not in terms of usage rate or, like, touches per game, but literally the length they have the basketball in their hands. I mean, last year, DJ Augustin, when he was with Orlando, led the league in average seconds per touch, if I'm not mistaken. This year, Markelle Fultz was at 6.01 seconds per touch.
Yep.
That's tied with Luka, to put that into perspective. And then Cole Anthony right now is at 5.8. That's a top five number in the league as well. So he's already, you know, the ball's already in his hands a lot. Now Aaron Gordon's out, and with Gordon and Fultz off the floor this season, a 25.2% usage rate, nearly a 20% rebounding rate, just under a fantasy point per minute. I just think with no Gordon and with no Fultz, and obviously still no Jonathan Isaac, who hasn't played this year, this entire offense is just going to be pick and rolls with or pick and pops with Vucevic and Cole Anthony, and then the occasional same sort of offense with Fournier handling the ball. Like, it's just going to be a three-man show on offense,
yeah.
And then when Terrence Ross comes in, he'll take his 12 to 15 shots most likely. I think the guys we mentioned, Anthony, Fournier, Vucevic, all really strong plays. Vucevic, I think, is an elite play, especially at his price. I think Cole Anthony is a really good one. Gary Clark will probably start, and that makes me love Vucevic even more because Gary Clark's usage rate is under 9% with those guys off the floor this season. We know what Gary Clark does. He just sits in the corner and spots up for three, which makes him somewhat interesting here because Toronto gives up the second most spot up points per game. That's what they allow on defense. He's 3,300. He should play 25 minutes or so, you would think. Any interest in Clark or James Ennis, Terrence Ross, any of those guys stand out to you with Aaron Gordon out?
I don't think so. And, you know, I'm looking at Ross, Dwayne Bacon, Ken Birch, James Ennis, and Gary Clark. And you mentioned Gary Clark's low usage rate. Like, none of them have a usage rate over 20% with these guys off the court, even Terrence Ross, who's typically a pretty volume dependent individual, and none of them are averaging close to a fantasy point per minute. They're actually all under 0.9 fantasy points per minute. So on a six, potentially five game slate, I won't go here. If this was a three game slate, I would have interest just to free up salary, but I'm confident that we can find better value elsewhere and just take advantage of the key cogs in this decimated offense.
All right, let's go to the Toronto side. OG Anunoby expected to be out again. Norman Powell is questionable. Upgraded to questionable. He was initially listed as doubtful, so he is questionable for this game. He missed the last game for Toronto. And then you have Aaron Baines, who's suddenly back to being a thing. He's played 23, 23, and 29 minutes the last three games. He just went for nearly 30 fantasy points, 16 rebounds in this matchup over the weekend. Any interest in Aaron Baines, and then who stands out to you from Toronto? Because I know I'm going to pick wrong between VanVleet and Kyle Lowry.
Yeah, I picked wrong between them last game. Aaron Baines, he's seen 20 straight, or excuse me, three games of 20 plus minutes in a row. And it's obviously been at the expense of Chris Boucher, who I had to do a legitimate double take at his price. He's 4,900. Like, he was just $3,000 more than this. Albeit, you know, we mentioned that he had 27 combined minutes in his last two games on the last podcast. He only saw 18 against Orlando, so he's still not at a point where he's reliable because Aaron Baines is taking his minutes. I don't hate Aaron Baines in this matchup. You know, obviously Orlando's a slow, methodical half-court team, not someone we go out of our way to attack, but if you want to target that game environment, it usually caters to big men, and he's cheap enough where as long as he sees 20-plus minutes, I think he will get there. I just wish it wasn't at the expense of Chris Boucher. Like, I wish that Toronto would just go big with a lineup and throw Lowry and VanVleet at the 1 and 2, put Siakam back at the 3 like they did a couple of years ago, then throw Boucher at the 4, Baines at the 5. Obviously, we know they can't do that. But it's these last three games have really made it, I don't want to say impossible for me to roster Boucher, but I still have reservations at 4,900. Where are you leaning in terms of Chris Boucher and his price? Because we haven't seen him. This might be his lowest price this season.
Yeah, I'm probably not going there. Vucevic is going to be on the floor for 35-plus minutes, and I don't think they want Chris Boucher as good of a shot blocker. He has a lot of his blocks come off just contesting threes and getting out on the three-point line. I don't know if they want him covering Vucevic in the post for 30 minutes or whatever. So I'm not going to go there. For the rest of this team, perfectly fine with Siakam. He scored 30 real points in each of his last two games. Probably gets a usage bump, too, with Baines playing more. He's not as high of a usage player as Chris Boucher. And, I mean, look, the matchup is fine. It's not incredible, but VanVleet and Lowry are both at price tags where I think they're perfectly fine. Does anybody else stand out, though, if both OG and Powell are out? Like, they've been giving more minutes to Stanley Johnson, but that's been more for defensive reasons, and he went back down to 12 minutes last game, so I don't think he's really viable. Plus, he's not really a great fantasy producer anyway.
Terrence Davis, I think it sounds weird to say his price is getting a little high because it's still only at 4,000, but he's just not a high usage guy. Like, I was shocked to see his volume last game. He did see 26 minutes, which is fine, but you know, they've really incorporated Utah Watanabe, excuse me, in the rotation since OG and Norman Powell went out, and you know, he's only seen 20 minutes twice in the last three games. He's really made the most of his minutes at his price. I watched a couple of the last two Raptors games actually, and he's just doing, you know, he's playing like he's on a 10-day contract. That's the best way to put it. He's playing like he's fighting for a roster spot, which frankly he might be. He's diving for loose balls. He's getting all the hustle stats, and it's starting to show up in the box score. Three blocks and a steal last game, two steals the game before that, two games with six more or more rebounds in the last three. Like, he's doing enough at his price where he's interesting to me, especially given his positional flexibility. So in all honesty, based on production, I prefer him over Terrence Davis in this matchup. But again, this is much like the Magic. I don't know if this is the game where I'll go value hunting.
All right, we'll keep an eye on the status of Norman Powell. That's actually it from this game because OG's already been – I don't think he's already been ruled out, but they said
– He's doubtful. I think he's expected no timetable or something like that.
I think they said he's expected to miss the next week or so. So I'm assuming
he's out.
All right, let's go to the Clippers and Brooklyn Nets. It's crazy. They have the total and the spread on this game, but they said that the Clippers are already starting with 20 points just because they know Brooklyn gives up so many points anyway. So the Clippers are up 20-0 right now.
Where did that production come from? That's what we have to know first.
Seriously, I know Bradley Beal and Westbrook are good, but 149 points in regulation is absurd.
Bradley Beal, like, that first half, and not to knock Bradley Beal, but, like, that first half, he didn't do anything.
Yeah.
So you really had a 1.5 of Westbrook and Beal and gave up almost 150 points. Like, this team, you know, they mentioned it. It was all over Twitter after the game. If the season ended right now, the Nets would have a historically bad defensive efficiency metric, while the
wasn't it like they would have literally the best offensive rating of all time and the worst defensive rating of all time?
That's exactly what I was about to say.
That's absurd.
Which, I mean, I was talking about it with a buddy the other day. You know, we were kicking the tires. I'm like, is this going, like, it is going to be an issue in 7-game series. Like, don't get me wrong. But if this team's fully capable of scoring 140 points a night, like, will it really matter? I think it will. But regardless, like, this is a regular season game against a very stout Los Angeles defense. My concern here is that, you know, the LA puts the clamps on Brooklyn and they can't do that vice versa. So, like, we could see what's this? What did you say the spread is on this game?
I actually lied. I thought the spread and total were up, but right now they're not.
Okay. I would expect, actually, I don't know what I would expect.
I would say Clippers -2.
Yeah. I was about to say Clippers -4. So, yeah, -2. Okay. That makes sense. So that, I mean, that this sets up to be a phenomenal game environment. So, I mean, we can start on the Brooklyn side. Like, James Harden obviously expected back. I still think Kevin Durant's too cheap. 10-1 is too cheap. Kyrie Irving, $8,800, too cheap. I probably won't go to Kyrie, but I have a lot of interest in Kevin Durant, regardless of the fact that I assume Kawhi will be on.
Yeah, he'll see a ton of Kawhi in this game. But Durant's one of the 5 or 6 most unguardable players ever. So as good as Kawhi is, I mean, I still have interest in Durant too. Harden's going to be the one I probably don't get to at 10-9. Obviously the algorithms priced him up after back-to-back huge games. One of those games obviously came without, one of those games came without Durant. So it's, you know, it's tough to get to him. I think Kyrie's in play at 8,800. I think he's a couple $100 too cheap, but it's not an incredible matchup. And then it's like, where else do you go? Because I've been playing Jeff Green because he's been playing so many minutes and closing at center a lot. But at 5,400, I probably won't go there. That's too much for Jeff Green, in my opinion. DeAndre Jordan's minutes haven't been there because Jeff Green's playing so much small ball 5. And this is a game where they can probably get away with playing Jeff Green at the 5 because Zubac doesn't play 35 minutes, and Serge Ibaka is not exactly a 5. Like, he's more of a 4, so I don't think it's a spot where they have to play DeAndre Jordan. And then Joe Harris at 6K is probably too expensive because he also had a productive game last time out in that crazy game, and now he's priced up. So it's kind of just Kyrie or Durant for me from Brooklyn. And it's going to be like that. It's going to be like one or two of these guys, not all three of them, obviously, for the foreseeable future. And they're like, they're a team right now where it's like you don't feel incredible about playing them unless somebody's out, but where Durant and Kyrie are priced, they're still fine in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. Of the two, I'm curious, like Kevin Durant on DraftKings 10-1, Kyrie Irving on DraftKings listed at 8-8. Who do you, with price factored in, who do you have more interest in?
I think I would go with Durant just because there's more point guards than forwards on this slate, especially if that Detroit-Utah game gets canceled, because then you'll lose like Jeremy Grant and, you know, Bogdanovich and Joe Ingles, maybe. Probably not Joe Ingles, but like, you get the point. Like, there's still Curry, there's Lillard, there's Westbrook, there's Malcolm Brogdon, Mitchell, maybe, Ja Morant, the Toronto guards. Like, there's still plenty of guards, whereas the forwards, like, we already lost Aaron Gordon, who's forward eligible. There is a drop off, so that's probably why I would lean Durant.
Yeah, I concur.
Let's go to the Clippers side. Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, they both returned in their last game, or last two, what was it, 2 games ago. They returned against Orlando. They played on over the weekend against the New York Knicks. Paul George, 8,900 is a pretty intriguing price tag. He's been fantastic this year. Kawhi is at 9,200. So they're both priced very fairly. We know Brooklyn can't play any sort of defense. The matchup from just an individual perspective would probably favor Paul George. So I like Paul George a lot in this game. I have plenty of interest in Kawhi as well. Thoughts on the Clippers, who are now, we haven't talked about the Clippers, I don't think, on a podcast since they got Kawhi and Paul George back. Yeah. So they were almost annoying to talk about, even when they had all those players viable, because their prices were like, yeah, he's in play, but I don't really want to play him.
Yeah, I mean, $9,200 and $8,900 are, on any slate, too cheap for both Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, especially given their production this year. Like, they're both on the same team, both flirting with 50, 40, 90, which is remarkable. Then you factor in the matchup. In addition to the fact that, obviously, they'll get whatever they want on offense, but they're going to be relied on even more heavily on defense just because of who they're playing against. I have a ton of interest in both of them, and I'm not even opposed to rostering both of them in a lineup, because we've seen them both have ceiling games in the same game. I don't think they'll be short for minutes in this game. There is no world where I see this being a blowout. So I personally still prefer Kawhi Leonard over Paul George when the gap is this close in terms of pricing, given the ceiling. But I can't possibly argue if you prefer Paul George over Kawhi, and I can't argue if you want both of them. I personally am going to go out of my way to have at least one and pair them with probably Kevin Durant.
Nicholas Batum's questionable. He didn't play over the weekend, and Patrick Patterson was really productive in 20 minutes. He had 13 and 3. 3,500 if Batum's out. If we don't get a ton of value, he could be someone to keep your eye on. Again, that's if we're really, really hurting for value. Other than that, though, like Lou Williams, we've talked about it. It's just not a year for Lou Williams. Serge Ibaka is too expensive for me at 6K. He's still priced up a little bit after his two or three really strong games with higher usage with Kawhi and Paul George out. Beverly's out again, which doesn't really change too much. Like, Reggie Jackson's going to stay in the starting lineup, but his usage rate is going to climb way down. He was still relatively productive, but do you really want to play Reggie Jackson here? Another team where it's like, who else do you go to? Like I said, maybe you go to a Patrick Patterson or Marcus Morris at 4,700, who played 28 minutes last game, wasn't exactly very productive. It's just, like you said, these guys are both pushing 30% usage rates in Kawhi and Paul George, so it doesn't leave a ton for anybody else. And yeah, they don't have a true center that plays 35 minutes that you can count on.
It's a very similar dynamic to what you see on the other side of this game. I think if you're going to force me to play an ancillary piece on this team, it would be Reggie Jackson. I do think as long as Pat Beverly's out, he is a bit too cheap. He'll probably sit within that 25 to 28 minute range. And obviously we know Kyrie Irving is an exploitable matchup on the defensive end. So I'm totally fine with him because we know he's going to shoot the ball, but it's not someone I'm going to go out of my way for like I am with Kawhi and Paul George. So I'll probably, when it comes to this game, focus on getting two of the studs in and building out the value out elsewhere.
All right, let's go to Memphis and the Indiana Pacers. Memphis is closing out a game right now. It's about 6 minutes left, so this will be the second end of a back-to-back for them. Obviously still going to be without Jonas Valanciunas. We'll see if anybody else ends up sitting on the second end of a back-to-back, but with them being shorthanded already, it seems unlikely. And then the Pacers, did you see how the Pacers lost the other night?
I did not.
So they were up by very, very comfortable margin in the fourth quarter over the Joel Embiid-less 76ers. And then I believe they didn't score a field goal in the final like 5 minutes of the game. The Sixers went on like a 21 to 4 run or something and ended up winning the game. Like they let Furkan Korkmaz hit some shots, Matisse Thybulle. It was bad. It was really bad, especially given Joel Embiid was out, but they're back at it here. They're still at home against the Grizzlies. Where do you want to start?
So I'm looking at this game, and Ja Morant, you know, while I'm looking at this game, it looks like he went to the locker room, but he actually just came back. So my concern, second half of back-to-back, knowing he just came back from an injury, like, do we think that we need to wait on the report post-game to see if it is something that could potentially hamper his availability for tomorrow, or would you automatically assume because he came back so quickly that he's totally fine? Because that, like, to me, that would determine a ton for Memphis.
Yeah, I mean, I don't look, players return back, have adrenaline, and then the next morning they're hurting and they have to sit out. Exactly. So I'm not expecting Ja Morant to automatically be in if this ankle injury is bothering him, which it could be. So we'll kind of talk about it just in case. Tyus Jones has a lot of
the team without him this year, so it's, yeah. we're not short on sample size.
Yeah, Tyus Jones has 11 assists in 22 minutes right now. He obviously got more playing time when Morant left, And then De'Anthony Melton, who's already been more of a part of the rotation with Grayson Allen out, he's been relatively productive, but they're giving Desmond Bane 21 minutes so far. Dylan Brooks' minutes are down, which I was worried about. So if John Morant's ruled out, I think you really feel good about Tyus Jones at 4,300. When he starts, he's usually relatively productive.
I would still like De'Anthony Melton.
Yeah, you can, like I said, you can still go to De'Anthony Melton. And obviously, like, there's just going to be way more usage to go around because other than Dylan Brooks, nobody else on this team is a relatively massively high usage guy. Like, Joe Val's obviously out. Kyle Anderson's more of a facilitator when he has to be. So Brandon Clark's decent in terms of usage. But, yeah, I mean, we won't know, obviously, until tomorrow. But, like you said, we do have a relatively large sample with John Morant off the floor.
Yeah, so, I mean, if John Morant is out, I think my priority would go to one of Tyus Jones or De'Anthony Melton and then Kyle Anderson. I think 5'7 is he's like a Harrison Barnes almost. Like, he's just a player that you never get excited to roster. But 5'7 is a price where even if Morant is in, he's a fine filler in your lineup. But with Morant out this season, Kyle Anderson's assist rate balloons to over 22%, rebounding rate over 11% with a 21.4% usage rate, averages about fantasy point per minute. At $5,700, that is totally fine with me. We saw him have some ceiling games in terms of peripherals, especially rebounding. And you have to imagine his rebounding numbers will only go up more with obviously Joval still out. I don't really see the bigs in terms of usage rate being that affected with Ja Morant out. Obviously, they lose their key facilitator, but Brandon Clark at 6'2 is still a fine play to me. Xavier Tillman at 5'1 is kind of approaching that price where I'm willing to make a decision and look elsewhere because we haven't seen that 40-point ceiling yet, which he's only cracked 30 once in these spot starts that he's picking up. So he seems more like a floor play than he does an upside play, which at that price, I just don't know if I really want to do.
Yeah, I think he has like 10 and 10 in, right now tonight.
Yeah. Yeah, so he's pretty damn productive tonight. If Morant's in, I think I would probably just approach this team as normal. He's too cheap at 7,500, assuming he has no limitations. And then I would obviously still like Brandon Clark quite a bit at $6,200. My only concern with Brandon Clark, like, this is a really, really bad matchup. If he's going to have his hands full defensively with Domantas Sabonis, and it's going to be hard for him to find room to operate around the rim with Miles Turner, who's averaging around 4 blocks a game right now, manning the paint. So if you're looking for a big man in Memphis, my preference is Brandon Clark over Xavier Tillman, but I'm really keen on the guards in this game.
Yeah, Tyus Jones has 8 starts this year, right around 10 points, 7 assists, 3 rebounds, 2 steals per game. So very solid for 4,300. And again, that's not like the guaranteed line you're going to get. There could be upside for more, especially with Joval out. So we'll keep an eye on John Morant's status. For the Pacers, Malcolm Brogdon and Sabonis are too cheap.
This is a really good spot for this team, too.
Like, I know Sabonis was bad last game. Okay, he had a bad game. I get it. 6 turnovers, 8 of 17 from the field, only 3 assists. Brogdon was great in that game. It's just the fourth quarter, this team, like I said, they just fell apart.
They shut down, yeah.
In the fourth quarter, they couldn't score.
Jeremy Lamb was also pretty productive. And this, the big thing for Jeremy Lamb, he's seen 30-plus minutes in 3 or 4 games, which was obviously working back from an extensive injury.
Yeah, I think Brogdon stands out the most, though, at 7,900. I talked about how top 5 in average time possession per game, 3rd in touches per game. Obviously, Sabonis is 2nd in touches per game. But I just think Brogdon, at that price, is tough to pass on. No issues going to Sabonis. Miles Turner is a little bit interesting. Now he's down at 6,800. It's just he doesn't usually take a ton of shots, so you're relying on blocks, which he gets more than pretty much anybody in basketball right now. But the problem is his rebounds are inconsistent because Sabonis takes a lot of them. Like, Miles Turner is one of those players that is really awesome in real life, but somebody I rarely play in fantasy unless Sabonis is out. And then you have the rest of his team. Like I said, Sabonis is fine. I don't hate Jeremy Lamb. And again, like I said, Brogdon is just too cheap. What do you think about the Pacers?
I think Brogdon is my favorite play on this slate, strictly from a point per dollar standpoint. Like $7,900, it seems like this price reduction should have come about a week ago when he had failed to crack 40 fantasy points for four straight games. But since then, he's at 60, 45, 40, 43. It just seems like it's a little bit late, and it's something I want to take advantage of, especially in a pace-up spot. And I would honestly like Brogdon more if Ja Morant plays. Obviously, greater chance to keep this game close and higher chance for defensive peripherals. Tyus Jones is also a pretty good defender. I like Sabonis at $8,700. This is a price we haven't seen him at in quite some time. But if I'm looking in that range, like I'll just drop $500 less and go down to Nikola Vucevic, who we talked about in the first game. Yeah. So Sabonis is in play, but I much prefer Vucevic as a priority. Jeremy Lamb is another player who I like in this game. I would rather play him at his price, which is right now sitting at $5,400, than I would Xavier Tillman at 51 on the other side. But outside of those three, I don't have a massive amount of interest. You know, if I was forced to choose one, it'd probably be Justin Holiday strictly for minutes, but he's really not done. Like over the last two games, he's averaging like half of a fantasy point per minute.
I agree. Let's go to a more appealing game, probably the most popular game of the slate, Portland at Washington. Second out of back-to-back for Portland, but they got blown out by Milwaukee. Of course, as we were talking about Milwaukee letting teams hang around, they blow Portland out, so that wasn't tilting at all. But, you know, Damian Lillard, under 30 minutes. Covington, under 30 minutes. Kander only played 25. Melo played 18. Nasir Little, I don't know where that came from, but he scored 30 points tonight, 30 real points. Portland, I don't think anybody sits with all the injuries they have right now. So we got Portland, Washington, two terrible defenses, two teams that play relatively fast. Who do you not like in this game, honestly? I mean, Lillard at 10-7 profiles.
Bradley Beal at 9-9.
You don't like Bradley Beal?
No, I'm saying I'm building.
Oh, yeah. Seriously, Bradley Beal at 9,900 is... There's a lot to like, though. I mean, Westbrook appears to be off the minutes limit, played 35, went off in that last game. He's 9,100. I think that's too cheap for Russell Westbrook in this role. I talked about it with his rebounds and everything. And he's, you know, double-digit rebounds again. Lillard, top, since McCollum's been out, he's among the league leaders in touches per game, minutes per game, or minutes per game, time possession per game. Washington's terrible. Like, I just, there's a lot of guys you can play here.
Yeah. I don't really think we need to dive into deep analysis of the three studs in this game. I think all three are incredibly viable. And it does make this a difficult slate because there's two games that possess at least three studs that I want a piece of. There's the LA-Brooklyn game with Kawhi, Paul George, Kyrie, and Kevin Durant. And there's this game with Lillard, Westbrook, and Beal. So decisions are going to have to be made. If I'm choosing between the two games, I do lean this game because there is literally no defense in this game, whereas the other game has defense on at least one side, except Brooklyn's might be bad enough to warrant no defense for both. Of these three plays, I probably prioritize them: Westbrook, Beal, Lillard. I know that's just reverse order of price.
So you just think Westbrook's just too cheap?
I think Westbrook is way too cheap.
Okay, I agree.
He should be over 10,000 in my opinion. Like, you mentioned it, Adam, over and over and over. This is like usage and peripheral rate wise, this is Oklahoma City Westbrook right now. This is who I want a piece of. It's someone we should be lucky to get at this price, and I intend to smash this price tag. Let me double check what he is on DraftKings. I believe he's actually, typically DraftKings players are less expensive because there's more cap to fill, but I actually believe he was $9,600 on when did they play? Monday. Or was it Sunday? It was Sunday. It looks like he tomorrow is 10,000. That's a little more appropriate. So I want to smash this, especially with the price discrepancy. Bradley Beal I'm fine with. Damian Lillard I'm fine with. But I'd rather go, if I'm over 10K, I'd rather go Durant than Lillard. Do you feel any differently about that order?
You would go Durant over Lillard, you said?
I, Yep, just because I have more interest in taking up my guard spots with
Yeah,
Beal and Westbrook than I
that
do with
makes
Lillard.
sense. As a raw play, I prefer Lillard, but I get it in terms of
Sorry, I
roster
should have
construction.
specified
No, I
that
get
for
it.
as a raw play, but positionally and how I want to
Yeah.
structure my lineup, I'll probably end up falling to Durant more.
What about these secondary plays here? Because Enes Kanter under 7K is really appealing. This Washington team has nobody in the front court that can slow him down or box him out or defend him in the post. Gary Trent, I probably won't get to at 6K. I understand he's playing huge minutes and he's been starting. Obviously, the minutes were down last game. They got blown out. But a guy that doesn't get peripherals at that price tag usually scares me. And yes, this is a game where if you're running different combinations of it, like he could have a 25-point real game against Washington. But that does scare me a little bit. Covington, on the other hand, like he probably has a lower ceiling than Gary Trent, but the floor is there because he gets rebounds and blocks and steals. But he's been pretty bad this year. He's also just 5,200. Melo's minutes have been down lately since Covington's been back. And then you have the Washington Wings who are kind of all over the place because they're all healthy now. Bertans played 30 minutes last game, which is just. If Bertans is going to play 30 minutes at 4,700, he has a ton of upside on DraftKings because he didn't produce too much, but we know he gets a lot of production off the three ball. He's somebody to keep an eye on, too.
He's just like a poor, I don't even want to say a poor man's. He's like Joe Harris Light in terms of like the DraftKings scoring and his price. So if we get, I don't want to say, we're not going to get any confirmation on his minutes because he hasn't been any type of restricted. My concern is that I think he might have seen more minutes than usual because Denny came back and was on a minutes limit in his
Right.
first start back. So if he sees more than 16 minutes, I would expect those to siphon directly off of Davis Bertans' playing time.
Yeah,
I do
especially
like the.
because Isaac Bunga wasn't even part of the rotation. So like those
Yeah.
minutes are clearly going if Denny plays more, they're coming out of
Bertans, yeah.
Bertans' playing time.
I do. I think, I mean, if we're expecting to see 25 plus minutes of him, I like him at his price, though. Of these ancillary pieces, though, Enes Kanter is my favorite. You know, Washington has been a team, not only this year, but probably the last three, four seasons to attack from the front court, and it's been no different this season. He's been absolutely dominating, like on the glass, like dominating. He's just too cheap. Like I'm trying to pull up what he did with the Bucks because obviously that game log is not
He
on.
went for 10 and 11 in 25
Okay,
minutes.
well, okay. So I mean, obviously I think a lot of that had to do with the way the game flow got out of hand. But he started the game with 6 and 5 in his first rotation, so. Assuming this game stays close, there's no reason for him to see under 30 minutes. There's no reason for him not to double-double, and it should be a very productive double-double with that. So I like him a lot as my secondary play. He's actually behind Vucevic, probably my top center on the slate right now. It's just so hard to not go Vucevic, where unless I go double center, I probably won't have Kanter.
Yeah, I also think you could get to Anfernee Simons at 4,200. The Wizards allow the second most points per game with opposing pick and roll ball handlers, which obviously bodes extremely well for Damian Lillard more so. But Simmons will have that role when he comes in for Damian Lillard. His minutes have obviously been up since McCollum's been down. Since McCollum's been hurt, last three games before tonight, 29, 28, and 27 minutes, and tonight he played 30. There's been some all those games I mentioned before tonight have been close too. So he's playing 27 to 29 minutes in close games. So it's not like he just played 30 minutes tonight because the game got out of hand. So I actually like him at 4,200, 4,300, excuse me, as well. There's clearly a lot of plays in this game. Two terrible defenses, and especially because a lot of these players got priced down, right? Like Kanter's under 7K, Beal's under 10K. So it's definitely a lot to like. Let's go to Boston and Golden State, where not so sure. There's some appealing plays here, but total for this game as it stands right now, 224.5, so not terrible. Boston favored by 3.5 on the road. Marcus Smart obviously going to miss some time for Boston. He's going to miss 2 to 3 weeks with a strained left calf. And then Kemba Walker is going to play, but they said he's going to be on some sort of minutes restriction the rest of the season. So he's yet to play 30 minutes this year. I would say you're ceiling for him in a game for the time being is 30 minutes. So that means yes, he'll have a high usage rate when he's on the floor, but on the minute when he's not on the floor, obviously this team's going to run through Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum.
Yeah. I was kind of disappointed to see that Kemba news because he's been pretty damn efficient in his limited time.
In the right matchup, you can play him. And
this might be the right matchup. Like, that's my thing. Like, if he sees 28 minutes in this game, like, at $6,700, like, I would like his price to be a few hundred dollars cheaper, but there is still, you know, an outside shot at a ceiling game here. He just obviously, especially with Marcus Smart and Peyton Pritchard out, he just shares the floor with so many other high usage guys. The play, I mean, I like Tatum in this game. Don't get me wrong, but Jaylen Brown just feels too cheap at $7,800 on DraftKings. Like, his minutes are through the roof. Like, obviously he's going to take an incremental production hit with Jason Tatum on the court, but you know, when he got off to his blazing start at the beginning of the season, like, that was, he was sharing the court with Jason Tatum. Like, this
they were both taking 22 plus shots every game.
And that's still in the range of outcomes. Like, he's still taking 19, 19, 21, 20, 28. Like, he is shooting the ball a ton. $7,800 against a Golden State Warriors team that loves to run in transition. I believe they're running the fastest pace in the NBA right now. I don't have it in front of me. I know they're top three.
They're top three, and Jaylen Brown just so happens to trail only Giannis in transition points per game, 7.9 per game. He's got a 26% frequency rate in transition, which is a top-tier number. He's been really good. He's shooting 67% in transition. He's been awesome in transition this year. So a pace-off spot like this.
Everything you're saying just wants to make me play him more.
Yeah, so I'm glad you brought him up because he's my favorite player from this game pretty easily.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's saying a lot when Tatum and Curry are also, you know, in the game. But I just think, like you said, he's underpriced. He's going to play 38 minutes. He's going to take 20 shots. The peripherals aren't, like, incredible, but they're fine. And he's just been I struggle with players like Jaylen Brown for most improved because he's been great and he's having a career year. But when you're comparing him to players who are kind of coming more out of nowhere, it's harder to give that award to a player like Jaylen Brown.
People expected him to take.
But the funny thing is,
his growth to be exponential year over year.
But the funny thing is, when we did the awards pod in the beginning of the season, one of you guys, you were
Michael
Christian
Porter
Wood,
Jr.
and yours is Michael Porter Jr. And I think Steph might have mentioned Chris Boucher as well. So I picked Jaylen Brown. So I didn't get the Draymond call right, but this one's looking all right. But yeah, I love Jaylen Brown here. Does anybody stand out with Marcus Smart being out? Does anybody get extra minutes? I mean, it wasn't Jeff Teague last game. Kemba's still on a minutes restriction. So, like, there's minutes available for somebody. It's just they're kind of just giving it to a handful of different bench guys, and it's not really mattering.
And that's for that reason, like, I would have liked, like, if they would have been going more consistent. Like, if Jeff Teague were seeing 20 minutes a game right now, I'd have interest in him at 4,500, but he's not, so I don't think it's reliable enough. I think even in this matchup, I'm okay narrowing my focus to Jaylen Brown, a dabble of Jason Tatum, and then if you want to take a shot on Kemba Walker. And it's odd I say that too, because typically I like to stack teams against Golden State, but I'm really okay with minimal exposure. But I really do want to get Jaylen Brown on my lineup on Tuesday.
All right, what about Golden State? James Wiseman going to miss the next week or so after he was diagnosed with a sprained left wrist. So he'll probably miss more because he's going to be reevaluated in that time period. Kevon Looney's been starting at center. I will say Kevon Looney is probably a trap on the slate. He played 23 minutes last game. He played the entire fourth quarter against the Pistons in a blowout. So
do you see, I mean, obviously he played the entire fourth in that game. What do you expect from a minute standpoint, understanding that he is obviously the direct beneficiary? He's been starting over Wiseman. Marquise Chris is still out. Wiseman now out. Pascal is probable, but he's still dealing with a back injury. Draymond Green, probable, still dealing with a bit of tightness. I have a hard time seeing him drop. I think he'll fall in that, like, 20 to 22-minute range.
Yeah, I guess.
Is there potential for more or no? I mean, I don't know.
You would think there should be. They don't have any other centers to play.
And the thing is, Boston is a team that, like, even when they have, like, Daniel Tice at the five, you can't really roll out. Like, look at who Golden State has to go small. Like, they could run a lot more Eric Paschal at the five, which if that's the case, he's enticing at 3,500. I don't see them running Draymond at the five much, just because he's just gassed, man. Like, we've talked about it before, but I just think his body can't really keep up with the wear and tear it's taken over the years, because he obviously was one of the best hustle players in basketball for the better half of the decade. That's for that reason, I don't see them running him at the five. So I think Pascal could be a candidate to start at the five, and so could Kevon Looney. Whoever does, I would definitely have interest in at 35 or 3,400.
I think Pascal was their backup five last game. I think he came in as, yeah. So I don't think this is a spot where, like,
than Looney in terms of fantasy.
Yeah, I know Tice and Thompson have obvious size over these guys, but they're not players where it's like, it's not like playing against a Rudy Gobert or a Bam or a Cat or an Embiid, where it's like, okay, you need a 6'10 to 7'2 center at all times on these guys. So, like, I think they can get away with playing Draymond at the five for times, Pascal at the five for times, and then giving Looney 18 to 20 minutes. Curry, 9,600. I don't think he's like a core play for me on the slate, but he's not a terrible option. And it's just the same thing. I mean, Wiggins is always priced where I just don't love him. Don't love the ceiling. Kelly Oubre has been a little bit better lately. But there's still some inconsistencies with him. And then Draymond just has no ceiling right now either. He's under 5K, but
the thing is, he's under 5K. Like, and this is far from the first time that that's been the case this season. I still have hesitations here. I get suckered into Kelly Oubre pretty easily at under 6K, so I'm fine there. But in terms of plays that I have confidence in, Steph Curry would still be the only one from this team. And frankly, I don't really have much interest in him on this slate, just because there's Kyrie for cheaper. Malcolm Brogdon's too cheap at point guard. I like Paul George in the guard spot more. I like John Morant if he plays. I like Beal, Westbrook, Damian. Like, the point being, there are so many guards on this slate where I don't think Curry is going to be a priority for me. Quick sidebar. David Jones has the potential to win another 100K right now.
So I would react, but I'm not surprised. So
I'm not surprised either. But
no, that's crazy.
Sent a screenshot in our Discord, 9:52. He's in first.
He tweeted 3 minutes ago, stat correction, and I'm giving away stuff.
And then 9:53, there was a stat correction. Now he's in second by 0.3. So he needs any type of stat correction in his favor, and he's shipping another 100 grand. And Devin Booker just won the game with a 3-3 for the Suns. So he's back.
Team, man.
I know. Anyways, back on topic. Curry, great play, just not a priority for me, strictly given the a ridiculous abundance of guards on this slate.
All right, let's close it out with a game that we got to keep an eye on. Detroit at Utah. Obviously, the Pistons game got postponed on Monday night due to, what was it, it was inconclusive.
It was inconclusive, yeah. So that's because of that, like, there is potential that it could be negative or that it is a false positive, that's why I don't think we can rule this game out yet. Like, if this was a positive test, we could pretty safely rule this game out, but that's not the case.
Right. It was going to be the second out of back-to-back for the Pistons. Now it's not, so we don't have to worry about that if the game's played. I don't understand why Rudy Gobert got priced down so quickly, but at 7,200 against Detroit, I'm all about that.
They're 30th against rebounders, 27th against rim protectors. Gobert has had.
Does Rudy Gobert rebound and protect the rim? This is my first year watching basketball. I don't know.
I mean, I'm pretty sure he is an above average defender. Just got paid a fuck ton of money for. Which, I'll be honest, like, I was kind of against that contract when it happened. But he's kind of proving why they gave him that money. He really is this season. And he's not going to put up 25 and 15 every game, but he really, really impacts the game. And I was wrong. Not as wrong as I was about Jason Tatum, but I was wrong.
Yeah.
To be fair,
I don't know about you, but I was in the Jason Tatum's overrated in fantasy, but I also thought he was slightly overrated as a player, but that, yeah, he He obviously made me look stupid, like many players have done. Anybody else that's like Donovan Mitchell's a guy I haven't played when he's 8K. Like 7,600 for Donovan Mitchell is very enticing in this spot. So I actually don't hate him at all here. Obviously, you're not getting to Jordan Clarkson, I don't think, at 5,800 with Mitchell back. Same with Joe Ingles. Bogdanovich has been just so bad in fantasy, other than the last two games, really, where he's just popped off for 32 and 29 real points. And so he has 32 and 29 points in the last two games. And that in those same two games, he has 4 rebounds and 4 assists. So it's just like, that's what you get with Bogdanovich. He can pop off for a ton of production off threes, but it's obviously risky.
Yeah, I agree. He's too one-dimensional for me, even at his price. If I'm looking elsewhere on this team, I do think Donovan Mitchell's a touch cheap, but you know, same issue I had with Steph Curry. There's just so many guards I like on this slate where I don't know if he will find himself as a priority. And that's kind of like, I in terms of Rudy Gobert and where I rank him, he's behind Vucevic.
I agree.
I think I'd slide him above Kanter, though.
I agree.
So I think those would be the top three centers. But there's also a handful of players with power forward and center eligibility who I would obviously I think I'd rank Sabonis ahead of Gobert. I don't think I'd take Sabaka. Siakam. Holy cow.
I like that.
Ahead of Gobert. Yeah, I don't know why. I might have just come up with something. Too bad he's not on the team anymore. But like point being, like Gobert is very high on my radar, as is Mitchell. There's just more depth at Mitchell's position. So that really rounds out my interest in Utah with Mitchell back. I won't go to Mike Conley at 6'4". Clarkson at 5'8" is actually kind of interesting if you are scripting this as a blowout. But other than that, I don't think I'd touch this team.
For Detroit, Jeremy Grant's in a terrible matchup, but he got priced down to 7K.
Yeah, he's really cheap.
You could talk me into Jeremy Grant there. But other than that,
he does enough where he should be able to get there. Other than that, though, like you said, the fact that this isn't a back-to-back anymore, I would assume takes away the potential for either or both Derrick Rose and Blake Griffin to sit.
Yeah, I think Blake was listed as a starter. Like he wasn't resting tonight, and the game postponed.
He was. So
they need to. Can they just make their trades already, so we can get some different players on this team, so we can stop just saying, "Yeah, Jeremy Grant or bust." I think there's been two or three slates all year where we actually, like, one of them was the other night when we talked about Mason Plumlee and Jeremy Grant, and then there was like a Derrick Rose slate, and then when Rose was out and DeLon Wright was out, it was like a Killian Hayes slate. It was just that's it. Like, please trade Rose to the Clippers or wherever he is rumored to go to. Please trade Blake Griffin to. I don't even know who would want Blake Griffin to be honest right now. I don't know where he would fit.
I don't know.
Like, where the hell would Blake Griffin fit on a team trying to contend for a championship? I don't know.
I'm actually looking at the NBA standings right now. I can't think of one.
Like, who needs a power forward that. But, like, at the same time, like...
Maybe a team... no, not Portland. Because Portland just spent so much money on Bob Covington. That's tough, man. Like, you look at, like, the back end of the East on these teams trying Boston. To stay in, like... That's... Boston is probably the most realistic. Like, definitely not... Obviously not
but Cleveland, then you have three... You have three players who you're going to have to play at center more, because... Unless you're going to play Tatum at the 3 and Jaylen Brown at the 2, but then when Marcus Smart comes back, like, I don't know. I don't know what to make of Blake Griffin.
Maybe Houston?
I don't know if they want to trade. Like, I don't know if they want to mess with anything right now.
That's true. They are playing really well. And that's probably not something to mess with. Yeah, Blake Griffin, point being, he's in a tough spot right now.
Yeah. But that'll do it for the slate. Again, keep an eye on this game. This is the one game that we easily could see being postponed, and it could become a 5-game slate. So David Jones, ridiculous. If you want to win money like David Jones, check out FTN Daily. David Jones himself writes his article. It's the bank shot. He puts his plays and his analysis in that article every single night and plays those players. And you see the same thing tonight that you saw the last couple times he's done that. Other content, the Game by Game article, the Five Stats article that Joe and I alternate with. I'll be taking both of them on Tuesday because Joe is a scrub. I'm filling in for Joe. I actually wanted to. I'm in the mood to write, and I love writing. So I'll handle both those articles. Plus, we'll have all the live streams and everything like that throughout the day and evening on Tuesday. Best of luck.
I actually am on the stream with Kawhi Eisenberg tomorrow. I will be around in some form or fashion.
Get your sleep and get some Red Bulls.
Before we go, I think we'd be doing a disservice if we didn't plug the Super Bowl package through FTN. Like, I looked through it today. It's similar to like a similar structure to the draft guide that we threw out before the season. The Super Bowl guide is only $20, and it literally comes with, you know, I'm looking right now. It looks like it has upwards of 10 DFS articles, over 10 bet articles / pieces of content, best bets that are provided, and there's a handful of videos, courtesy of some of the best in the industry, whether it's Jeff Feinberg, Elliot, Jeff Ratcliffe, Pat Mayo. Like, you are getting access to the best voices in the industry at the absolute best time. So it's one of the best deals in the industry right now.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of awesome analysts contributing to that. My partner in crime at the Fade the Chalk podcast, Derek Brown, is doing a lot of content for that. I think he's doing the Showdown article for it, and then some. So, yeah.
Yeah, content, that Showdown article is an absolute Bible.
Yeah, content out the wazoo over at FTN Daily. Of course, FTN Fantasy as well, for your season-long stuff, podcasts. We got a bunch of stuff on the site, plus the Discord, so make sure you're not missing out. Best of luck on Tuesday's slate. Have a good one. We'll be back on Wednesday for some more NBA talk on the FTN Fantasy NBA Podcast.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode of the FTN NBA Podcast with Adam and Joe. Please subscribe, rate, and review the podcast.